raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over!
The world we're alive.
Why not raise a little hate?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the Q0 Theater Cast. This is your host, Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, here today with Jacob Randlett.
Hello.
And today we are talking about my favorite musical. I know it's a favorite of Jake's, and Jake actually happens to be in a production of this show right now playing my favorite role. That would be Little Shop of Horrors, which, Jake, you are in at the Hatbox in Concord, which plays through two more weekends, June. What's the closing date there?
Our closing date is June 16th, so that means you have two more weekends, four shows apiece.
Yes, two more weekends, so that's eight more performances. They got that double show Saturday thing going on. It's very exciting times. I mean, we'll get into it. I know you guys are putting some unique flavors and flares on it. I've seen a couple of production photos, but I've been trying to avoid all the spoilers. I'm hoping to catch it this upcoming weekend, but I want to just put together a short little podcast, not only to promote your show, but just to talk about this show that we both love so much. Tell me a little bit about specifically the Dive In Productions production of Little Shop of Horrors.
All right, so this is, like you said, this is Dive In Productions, the brainchild of Marina Altschiller, in cooperation with Jordan Formicelli. Both of them are Portsmouth-based theater office, theater artist, most likely seen at the Players Ring. It's just been a perfect mix of a collaborative effort of what makes, you know, what's making people laugh in the rehearsal room, what's really hitting people's emotions, you know, other than humor, like what are they doing to invoke those things, remembering those things and trying their best to incorporate it into the characters, into the story, into the beats that we take that may not necessarily line up with traditional beats, traditional tactics taken in other productions. And it's just been a complete blast. And I mean, we show up and we're tired. Some of us drive quite a ways to get to rehearsal or get to the shows. But once we're there, it's just a bunch of people trying to make each other laugh. And there are worse things to walk into. So that's just kind of how the process has been so far and just the team that we established.
Excellent. Let's give a little background on the show. I guess that's probably where we should have started. It's a 1980s musical based on the 1960s Roger Corman film of the same name about a man-eating, talking Venus flytrap plant. A lot of fun doo-woppy numbers, some very unique characters, very memorable songs. I mean, Feed Me and Suddenly Seymour are definitely both firmly lodged in the musical theater canon as, you know, Alan Menken standards. You know, and there was the movie version that a lot of people are more familiar with than the stage version, with Rick Moranis and Steve Martin and John Candy and Bill Murray in small bit parts that are not actually in the musical, but they installed into the movie. To me, again, it's my favorite show. It's a science fiction musical, which a lot of times those don't get a lot of mainstream love. It's very, I mean, especially the stage version, it's got a lot of heart, but then it's also a very dark piece that doesn't, you know, skate away from its Greek tragedy origins. What was your background with the piece, Jake, before you got specifically involved with this production?
So specific to me is that to this day, I've actually not sat in the audience for a live production of Little Shop. I've had two opportunities in the past year that fell through, actually. My first theatrical production of Little Shop is the one that I'm in. I am familiar with the film, and I was going into the film, I was old enough to where I had heard about the adaptation sickness, if you will, and I know we touched on that towards the end of our musical movies episode of the Q0 Theater Cast. But still, I mean, I still greatly enjoyed that. And I think there are some parts when it was faithful, it did a good job. And I think the performances themselves get forgotten. I think people forget how good Rick Moranis is as a Seymour. You know, it's 1987. Who else could Seymour be for the back half of the 1980s?
Rick Moranis at the height of his stardom, if you will. I mean, I wouldn't really... Yeah, let's call him a star. Height of his stardom, I think, yeah, is perfect in that role. He just completely embodies the lovable loser that you could see get caught up in all of this. And he has... You know, the thing I love about the movie version and the, you know, the original Broadway is it's from an era before this modern era that I have some issues with, where there's so much more emphasis on character and matching the style, which is definitely very gritty, than necessarily finding the prettiest or sounding singing voice or what's going to sound best on the album. But he still sounds, you know, he's still got a pretty legit singing voice, as do all of the performers in the movie. You know, again, they're not necessarily super trained singers, but they embody the character so much.
Absolutely. And I mean, I would argue that, you know, maybe we, you know, I would like to think that we have very good singers in our show. But I think on top of that, I think what puts them over the edge into getting cast in our production at the Hatbox is really embodying the characters and bringing, be it humanity or humor or tragedy, empathy, or just a combination of all those things. And it really just worked out great. And, you know, we have these incredible ad-libbing, wisecracking urchins. And we have our Seymour, Joel King, who's 20 years old and just embodies the Seymour Krelborn type so much. And in really kind of... He really paid respect to the role as much as he wanted to sing it well. He's just like, I need to be naive and I need to be curious and I need to be a little scared and I need to be a little gullible. And it's just, I think a musical comedy like this, although there are obviously, like you said, it's essentially a Greek tragedy in the end. Musical comedy doesn't always give you a ton of both in terms of a great vocal score, witty character appropriate lines and lyrics, and then just the characters themselves, so much heart, so much humor, and in some cases even their cartooniness for some of the characters is, it doesn't turn you off, it doesn't necessarily take you out of this fantasy world. It's always a little bit grounded. Granted, it's a talking plant, but I mean, there are people like this plant who deceive and manipulate. There are people like Oren Scrivello DDS who abuse and control. And yes, it might be turned up to 11. And, you know, Seymour and Audrey and Mr. Mushnick might be turned up to 10.5. But at the end of the day, it's this great story where you care for these characters. And you also get to hear them just rock out to a great early Menken and Ashman score.
This is definitely a piece that's traditionally done in bigger theaters. I know that the Broadway revival in 03 actually had a crane built into the set that operated the plant at the end of the show. So that's clearly not the experience we'll be getting at the Hatbox, being a 99-seat, very intimate performance space. What has this piece being in the Hatbox really transformed or changed about what you think, you know, how it's being presented, and like what benefits are there to doing this in such a space where the audience is right up in your face.
This is an amazing show, honestly, to be up close for, because so much of, particularly the role of Seymour, is reaction. It's hearing these threats. It's hearing these, you know, these bargains with the devil, to, you know, before a word is even said, to see the reaction of, what on earth am I getting into? Then there's kind of the physical nature of the show, because, you know, there's a violent element, again, although cartoony in the case of the plant, but it's a physicality that relates more when you're that close to it. When Oren is smacking around Audrey, it's just that much more startling. When Oren is intimidating Audrey, and it's just, and you know, in the case of our production, it's just getting right up in each other's faces and intimidating and controlling, and it really heightens that tension more. And having that proximity in the case of the Hatbox, you know, something as simple as a whispered ad lib can get a chuckle. And then there's the other direction of like this intensity. And when it's done in this proximity, it's really felt.
Now, you know, as we kind of touched upon, this is a science fiction musical, obviously. And there's been, you know, a number of other attempts at science fiction musicals, and I really feel that outside of Little Shop, until this current crazy run of Be More Chill that's going on right now, not a lot of other really out there science fiction musicals have succeeded in such a mainstream fashion. What do you think makes Little Shop different than, you know, some shows that might not have made it to Broadway or as been as big with staying power that have a more sci-fi element?
I think logistically what really helps Little Shop is that the fantastical element is just that. It's an element. It is this focus on this ever-growing, eventually speaking, plant that you feed your castmates to. And I think the fact that it's all the production focus can go into that, and then the rest of it is, you know, it's characters and period costumes and, you know, quick changes and a simple storefront set, you know, nothing that your normal community theater couldn't do. And then it's just like, okay, we have all these simple elements all set. We have the people, we have the basic setting and backdrop, and now here's our centerpiece. Here's what makes this out of this world adventure. And that's the plant. When it's done by a regional or even like the Broadway revival, again, that's, you know, if you see or hear any clips from that, again, that's a pretty, you know, by Broadway standards, that's a pretty basic set with scrims and backdrops and a store. And then there's this just really, really cool set of Audrey 2 puppets. And that's just really cool. And especially once you get to the Broadway level and they're so big and they're so well puppeteered and they have an amazing singer behind them, and you're fitting, you have your Mr. Mushnick walking into it because it's so big that you can do that. So you get all the fantastical bits you want in one compact package of just a well-constructed, well-puppeteered Audrey plant.
Yeah, I mean, the Act 2 plant on the Broadway revival was like the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. As I said, it got lifted up by a crane. And it's just, I mean, practical effects need to get more love, both on stage and on movies. Like the movie, whether it's the movie puppet or the West End, very different take on it. The last time it was on the West End with the very more pitcher plant, just puppets deserve our attention. I still would say that unless you're doing a movie that has really well done CGI and is in like 3D and really rendered really well, practical effects still look better. I just think to like Star Wars movies coming out that I would much rather see the Jabba the Hutt puppet than a Jabba the Hutt rendering. The Jim Henson Studio really needs to make a comeback. Like, I mean, they made That Plant. They made the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the 90s. They made like stuff like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and just so many iconic puppets that to me still look better than anything that you could generate with a computer. Not that you can generate with computers on stage, but, you know, just being able to have some fun. And like the, you know, as you were talking about, the last time it was on Broadway, the puppet, they built the Act One final version of it was like joystick controlled and was still like fully animatronic, but could do some of the things that the movie puppet could do where it could like roll around and you could see that there was like nothing under it. And that was just incredible about how much detail and how fun they could make those things work.
So speaking of puppets, we do have a lot of puppets in Act One for the plant, handled expertly by our ensemble members, Tess Hodges and Kayleen. But then Audrey gets full grown, and we do have a slightly different take, which I'm sure just took away one of your questions for how we have changed it up. And we have actress Laura Miller handling the role of Audrey too. And it has been so fun and exciting. Our stage manager, Morgan, and Jordan, who is our Audrey, but also is helping produce the show, have worked really hard with Laura to create a costume concept for the plant and for other members of the cast who help the plant expand as the show goes on, kind of acting as its tendrils and whatnot. And that's a really fun design. But I think more than that, it's just really interesting putting a human face on the plant and making it a female in this case, because if you boil down the Audrey to Seymour relationship, it is a seduction. And, you know, not to reinforce heteronormativity, but, you know, we have Seymour pining after Audrey. You know, now we have this plant that he's named after her in honor of her. This is the one actually seducing him. That's been so fun to play around with. It just always cracks us up when Laura makes the choice during Act Two, when Tui's just kind of, you know, pestering and poking at Seymour, just going, "Feed me, feed me." And she delivers it like your girlfriend who's sick on the couch and like you haven't decided what to order for dinner. She doesn't want to help you pick, but is hungry and wants you to order immediately. Just again, it's little things like that, the kind of stuff that's worked out in the rehearsal room, that's just so funny and works so much for the presentation style that's been chosen here. Obviously, logistically, it's a huge help to not have a huge plant to puppeteer. It is interesting to put a face on it, you know, a human face and a female face on it.
No, I was gonna say I've always been one that struggled with what it changes when you do have a female as the voice of the plant. And I don't want to, you know, not to poo-poo your production. I haven't seen it yet. I'll be interested to see what it does. I just know, you know, like when I've seen, this will be the first time I've seen in person a production that has gone with the female Audrey too. But every time I've seen clips online, I'm just like, oh God, it changes. So you're right. It changes so much of that dynamic. And I don't know if it's worked for me yet. A lot of these productions, and I'm 100% saying this is not your production, but a lot of times they're like high school productions where you've got that female bass that You know, it's the girl that can't really sing, but, you know, they stick her in the part because she can kind of, like, talk sing it well. But I know Laura is a great singer, and I'm sure is doing great justice to the part, so I know that that's not the case. But you're definitely right that it becomes more seductive and can kind of play with things and add a weird sexual tension there that might not be present when you have your traditional Motown bass playing the part.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the whole point of this production style is, as much as we're respecting the original format of the show, it's adapting it to the new environment and this new choice, and that's been so fun. And I think, you know, of anyone who's gotten to have the most fun with it, it's Laura as Audrey too, and she's been absolutely killing it. She translates the vocal score so well to her own belty style. And then just acting wise knows pretty much exactly what to do in any given moment to make, Audrey 2 a pest, make them domineering, make them legitimately intimidating. It's just really exciting to see. And, you know, skepticism is fine. I'm sure all of us at one point or another, maybe even including Marina, our director, you know, was just going, hey, is this working out in reality like it? I think it works in my head. Because sometimes you daydream a concept that you don't think existed before, and sometimes you make it a reality and you go, I think we need to take that one back to the drawing board. Or in the case of this, it's just like, oh, it clicked.
Now, did they intentionally set out to go, we're going to cast a female Audrey 2? Or was that just a... were they open to interpretation and this was the best actress they had or best performer they had at auditions? Do you know about that, or has that not come up?
If I remember the call sheet correctly, their plan was to find a female or female identifying person to play Audrey 2. And the second thing I remember is they were open to a male or male-identifying urchin. So we have our trio of Angelica Rosenthal as Crystal, Carly Sousa as Chiffon, and Chetty Davis as Ronette, who is so hilarious and, you know, as one of the veterans in the cast, kind of takes on this mom role of the urchins in relation to the other characters in the show, which is very funny. So some of these unique casting choices really, I think, just open them up to, you know, even if, you know, granted it was the goal to try and have this change in casting style, but I think it also really gifted them the right people for this particular production.
Now, are there any other unique twists that they've put on it? What do you feel makes this production stand out from your everyday average production of Little Shop of Horrors? Or do you not want to give too much away?
That's what I'm thinking about right now, is trying not to give too much away. I was about to use the word gritty, but I don't quite think it's that. It's this distilled, intensified, you know, if a moment calls for aggression, it's aggressive. If it calls for pure silliness, we try to max that out as much as possible without, you know, not being funny in the end. As my loving parents gave in their review, they were amazed at the amount of energy on that stage from everyone. And between the performances we put on stage and what we're doing backstage to keep things rolling smoothly, because, I mean, there's only 10 of us. So it's, you know, it's eight principals and our two incredibly hardworking ensemble members who have to work dang hard vocally, help with some of the early puppeteering, and bring a lot of stuff to life that we can't do with just the eight of us, and they take on all these little things throughout the show. And it's everyone working their butt off to make it work, especially in this space with only so much room backstage, only so many hands available to get something done. So it is Little Shop of Horrors at 150 miles an hour, and we make it a thrill ride.
I mean, I could go on and on about Little Shop. We've talked about my feelings about different things with the movie and the ending and changes and various interpretations. And I don't want to make this podcast about that. I want to make this podcast about your production. So the Q-Zero Theater Cast is not just about promoting Q-Zero shows. It's about promoting all local theater, especially local theater that's taking risks and trying new and innovative things. So, Jake, if you could give me some final thoughts or maybe some selling points that we haven't discussed about this production. Again, you've got 8 more shows. I'm hoping to get this out before the weekend. Why should people come see this show and support Dive In Productions?
If you want a production, a Little Shop, that gives you a lot of what you expect and a lot of what you don't expect out of a production, a Little Shop, that's really the best way to sell it, is you just get stuff you love and stuff you didn't know you needed, but hopefully that's what we're giving to you. That was the goal, putting this together, and it's just been an utter blast. Come see me play a really ridiculous villain. It's a role that I play with complete joy, even though the character should not be instilling too much joy in the audience or his fellow characters.
Yeah, maybe give me a little bit of that. What's it like playing such a twisted, sadistic, but still having some uncomfortable comedic moments character like Orin Scrivello, DDS?
I put this in an explanation. I was helping do a questionnaire, trying to help with kind of the press and whatnot for the show. And I think how I worded it was, I want to make the audience laugh and have as big a reaction to me as possible while also making my death as warranted and as desired as possible. So I want them to laugh at my completely insane song, and then 20 minutes later I want them to be, you know, applauding my death if possible. Trying to hit both of those spectrums, and you know, it's tough to play a really gross human being who is thoroughly entertaining as written. And it's a gift and a curse for a character like this, a villain so good, but you do want to retain, a modicum of deplorableness of this. Just like, you know, you don't want anyone to miss you when you're dead in the story. And that's kind of the goal I'm going for. If I can make people, you know, rolling in the aisles during Dentist, but then, you know, have a huge smirk on their face at my demise, then that's, you know, that's a job well done by me if I can do both of those things.
Or do you take particular inspiration from anywhere with this role? I mean, I know some people, not that you want to steal choices, but some people are like, oh, I want to be like the movie, or I want to be nothing like the movie, or some people will be like, oh, I think there's a lot of the Joker in this role, or different things. Like, what do you tap into when it comes to creating the nature of this character?
I mean, I can't say that I'm not influenced by performances. Obviously, Steve Martin in the film is iconic, and, you know, definitely is in my head subconsciously. Douglas Sills in the Broadway revival has such an energy, and he's such a refined singer, you know, a beautiful Broadway voice. I bet at the time his casting was interesting for the Dentist, but he brings this insane energy to it. But then there's just outside influences, you know, There's there's Jim Carrey films that, you know, Jim Carrey quotes and moments that play in my head, playing this character. Jeff Blim of the production group Starkid has played a lot of these kind of wide-eyed, high-energy, psychotic comedic characters. So all these influences kind of play in my head. And then so maybe the comedic elements I might be influenced by others, but as far as the serious side, it's just it's a matter of kind of trusting, you know, getting trust from my Audrey and my Seymour, getting a feel from them what makes them uncomfortable, and how can we do a version of that that's safe for the stage? How close do I get to Audrey when I'm intimidating her? How am I grabbing her arm to move her along? When I'm being kind of playfully intimidating with Seymour, like how much am I violating his space? I think one of my favorite kind of directions from Marina is you get in Seymour's personal bubble 20 times more than Audrey ever does. So, you know, Mushnick hasn't been hugging him. Audrey has never been hugging him. But the second you step into the shop, you're patting him on the back, you know, give him a little dig in the shoulder, a punch in, you know, playful, you know, stomach punch, just like, hey, we're joking around here, but you are, you know, you're the one touching him the most throughout the entire show. This character so void of physical touch, and here comes this just bastard to come in, and he's the one who gives Seymour physical affection, and there's something just really screwed up about that.
Jake, final thoughts. If you've got, let's say, like, one tweet to sell me on this production, A Little Shop.
This production is, it is something borrowed, something blue, something old, something new. There's a lot of blue, if we're talking about the humor. Things borrowed, things new, things old. It is everything you expect and nothing you expect out of a Little Shop.
Great. Well, thanks for talking with me, Jake. I just want to remind everybody that Little Shop of Horrors plays at the Hatbox Theater in Concord, New Hampshire, now through June 16th. There are 8 performances remaining. You can get your tickets online or at the door. Just punch a Hatbox into the old Google machine. We will also be announcing some other super secret summer series projects, as well as some information about season 2 and a season 1 wrap-up party, all coming down the pipeline. If you're a member this summer, I'm going to be going balls to the walls with giving you so much more content through our Patreon and GoFundMe and all of that. A lot more pulling the curtain back behind the scenes on Next Normal. I'm hoping to do like weekly director's thoughts videos and really help people get into the process. And what exactly does a director do? I know I get that question a lot. So there are big things on the horizon. I can't officially announce anything yet. You know how these things work, contracts, lawyers, all that. But you know, keep tuned on all social media, on the Q0 Theater Cast as well, and we will be making some big earth-shattering announcements before the summer is over. So, Jake, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. For the Q0 Theater Cast, this is Artistic Director Dan Pelletier. As we always say, support local theater and join the revolution.
Hey Q0 fans, this is Artistic Associate Tom Locke coming to you asking if you were wondering how you can join the revolution. The easiest way to join the revolution is to become a Q0 member today. By becoming a member, you're going to help us bring more work to you. Included with that are many great benefits, including our newsletter, merchandise, signed memorabilia, exclusive podcasts, exclusive videos, access to our New Works blog, and so much more. We have two different options that you can use to become a member. One is our annual option through our GoFundMe, or we also now offer a monthly option through our Patreon, starting at as low as just $2 a month. Search Q0 on either GoFundMe or Patreon, or check out the links in the show description. Sign up today and join the revolution.